What's up, Mutation Nation fans? Hey, it's us. Remember us? We forgot all about us, too. It's really good to have you back. Sorry we've been spotty lately. There's just been a lot of real life stuff interfering. We're doing our best. We're going to keep up on it. We haven't really gone anywhere. Just, you know, bear with us for all four of you out there still subscribed. But today, me and Dan, we're going to talk about some interesting news. It's a little off the cuff. We usually do, you know, we're knee deep in season three. We're about halfway through season three of the 87 run of the Ninja Turtles TV show. But we're also very, very vocal IDW comic advocates. And as of last week, some massive news was dropped, wasn't it, Dan?
Absolutely. Hey, everybody. We've been recording episodes. We just haven't been editing them and putting them out to you. So they'll get there eventually. But oh my goodness, look at all of this IDW news. I'm so excited.
It is really, honest to God, I think I said this to Katie the other day. Like, this is equated to, if not greater than, the original Turtle Mania I remember growing up. The amount of content and, like, well-curated, cared-for content. This isn't like, you know, when Marvel sold off all of their movie right franchises and we got dog shit movies. This is like good, close to home, tight to the chest stuff that's really being put together by the fans who grew up with it.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a great love letter. New movies, new comics, new TV show coming, video games all over again. It's literally Turtle Mania 2.
And it is one of those. It's not, I think the thing that I like the most about it is that it's not just like new generations of fans turned creators making stuff, but it's also being done with like Kevin and Peter participating in a lot of it and overseeing a lot of it. So
yeah, it's kind of honestly hard to really fathom like this thing that we were essentially born into, right, Dan? Like this wasn't something that was like we found. It was a prereq for us in the 80s, and they're coming up on their 40th anniversary. and just give me a moment. I need to go get a colonoscopy.
It's not bad to get one of those, but we haven't quite hit the age where they're mandatory yet. Couple more years.
It's wild though. Like we're kind of like broaching on the moment where I know that the joke has been made before and the parody's been done to death, but like Middle-Aged Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to see it done with earnest now.
It's kind of hard. Like, will we? One of the things that we've been seeing in some of the IDW issues is Turtles in the future. And then obviously there's the whole Last Ronin.
I mean, we've seen Turtles. If I remember right, in the Archie run, when they did post-Future Shark, and it was the cyber, remember the cyber samurai turtles?
No, I don't. That must have been after I dropped Archie.
So the Cyber Samurai Turtles, hang on, I'm going to do a quick search, see if I can throw something in there. It was a run in the comics that they did based on a toy line that got launched. And I think if I show you this image in our Discord chat right here, and I'll put it in the main Discord server. There was a run in the comics.
Oh my goodness.
You don't remember that, huh?
They look like Beetleborgs.
Okay, here's I'll send you a copy of the toys. Maybe this will look a little more familiar. Because I remember when these came out, I was like, oh my God, I need all of this. Cyberpunk, yes, please. that was before I even knew what cyberpunk was. But yeah, it's the turtles and they have these like mech suits. And it's in the future. And if you notice, look closely at the logo of the comic book from Archie. It says Mutant Ninja Turtles because it is in the future and they acknowledge they're not teenagers anymore. I remember like that was such a culture shock for me when I was growing up and I looked at that book. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God, they're grownups now.
That is really cool. Yeah, I that was beyond, I guess I had kind of dropped the ball by that point. I moved on a little bit.
I'm going to highly, this was the penultimate arc, I believe, if I remember right, in the Archie comics. I think there was one more brief run after this that kind of like bookended the series before it shut down, but it's a great arc. It's one of my favorites. It is also the one where Raphael punches Hitler.
I was just gonna ask, did Raph lose an eye?
Yeah. I mean, come on. Every time the turtles go in the future, somebody's lost a hand or an eye or has become the Shredder incarnate or something, right? Or it's get mutated into a monster or completely loses their flesh body and becomes a cyborg. It's mandatory. It's essential as like burning down April's apartment.
Yeah, that's true. It's just funny to see it in the Archie version because, again, like at this point in time, like I didn't have these comic books. And I mean, that's kind of even surprising to me because it's only 1994. I was definitely still firmly a fan.
Yeah, I don't think we give the Archie comics enough credit. I remember having that mental state, too, that like, oh, this is the baby's version. This is the kitty version. I want to read the Mirage comics. But honest, man, like the Archies got dark.
I mean, I didn't think of them as let me clarify. I didn't think of them as like a baby version. I always just associated it as being connected to the cartoon.
Right. Because it was a spinoff of the Adventures of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic that came out originally. That was a direct panel for panel remake of the first miniseries, that first season.
Yeah.
And then after that, they spun off on their own stuff. And there was a lot of connective tissue and a lot of the same characters cameoed in similar ways, but also different ways. And it really went off on its own at the end there, and it was really, really, really good.
That's so funny for me to consider, because I guess what that means is that, like, I stuck with the cartoon, because I remember, like, a lot of the series before I stopped watching it, and then, obviously, like, the tapes we've talked about for Burger King, and all the toys, like, oh my goodness, the toys. But I was a member of the fan club, so I got those magazines, but I guess I stopped buying the comics.
See, I stayed pretty in tune because I was subscribed to the Ninja Turtles magazine, and that would give you the news and information and snippets of all the stuff happening from all over the place. So I kept up on the Archies pretty well.
Nice. That's awesome. I'll have to see if I can check out some of the stuff. The art's really cool on it.
Yeah, I really like that art style, too. Again, like I had it in my head that this was just going to be like, I've already watched the TV show. Why do I need to read the TV show? But it's completely its own beast.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we kind of got into that, even though it feels like we're off on a tangent. But it's important because the Archies are so heavily influential to a lot of the stuff that's been happening in IDW lately, especially with like Mutant Town and an excuse to bring in all of the amazing old Playmates toys. Right.
Yep. And we're getting they've been hinting at a character coming back for the first time where they basically have only ever been in the Archie comic book. So it'll be interesting to see if and when that happens.
Okay. So in that note, we record this here on what the hell is the date today? February 25th. The announcement came out last week. And the unfortunate side of this is that we know that the current run of the IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mainline ongoing arc is coming to a close with issue 150 being wrapped full circle by the one and only Sophie Campbell, who has brought so much interesting lore into this. I really love what she's done. And I also really love that she's from our neck of the woods.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's from Rochester, dude.
Oh, that's awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah. So yeah, with the conclusion of that, that doesn't mean the story's over. Now, I remember when the news came out, I was so worried because they said it's going to be a reboot. And that always means that the continuity's over. They've built up so much lore, but that's really not the case.
It's a relaunch.
It's a relaunch. So everything that's happened still has implications, still has impact on our characters and our story. But we're going to see a fracturing, right? And I think we've been kind of predicting this for a while. I know I've been kind of calling out, like, how are they not franchising? Franchise more. There's so many good characters. So we got the announcement that at the end of issue 150, there's going to be the relaunch and the primary story arc that's going to be led by Tom Waltz with contributions by Eric Burnham, of course, oversaw by Eastman, and then a whole slew of new artists, most of which I'm unfortunately not familiar with. I don't know if you've done any of the homework on some of these new names that are getting added, but I'm not super familiar.
That's not who's running the mainline one. I think you're talking about Alpha.
That is the main line. That's the new main line.
Alpha number one's a one shot, and then they're continuing on from there with Jason Aaron and Chris Burnham full time.
Oh, that's the one Jason's taken. Okay, I thought Jason was on Mutant Nation.
So I'm looking at the Nerdist description right now, and let's go through each of these. Do you mind me just like reading the press release kind of deal?
Better than me trying to pull it out of my memory. Let's do it.
Okay, so the first one that they have in this press release is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Black, White, and Green, which is an anthology series that will feature new writers and artists on every issue. Among them are names like Declan Shalvey, Paulina Ganeshu, Javier Rodriguez, Jock, and more. And here's what Shalvey had to say about working on Black, White, and Green. Getting to work on the Turtles is an absolute dream come true. I was a total Turtles nut as a kid, had the Turtle Van, the Sewer playset, the works, and have always loved the characters. It's amazing to see the passion behind these characters, even through all the different iterations over the years. I've been hoping someone would invite me to do something with them for a long, long time. For it to happen on the Turtles' anniversary is a real treat. The cherry on the cake, or the pepperoni on the pizza, if you will. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Black, White, and Green, issue number one, goes on sale May 8th.
I'm personally super excited about this because I love one-off stories. Some of the best stuff that's happened in the Turtles have been those annuals that are really kind of on their own island. They are part of continuity, but they don't necessarily immediately impact what's happening in the current story run.
Yeah.
I I'm a huge fan of the Batman Black and White, and of course, everybody loves Marvel's Black, White, and Red. This is a great idea and severely, severely late. We should have been doing this a long time ago.
It is a great idea, and the thing that I love the most about it, I think, is that I expected it to be, Black, White, and Green, because the Turtles are green, and that's not any of, like, most of the artwork is not actually with them as green. It's these, like, green highlights.
Right.
Which the artwork that they've released so far is so cool. Like, the cover that they have for issue number one, where the masks are green and the city skyline is green, and there's this Go mm-hmm. Ninja as they're jumping across a building. Like, it stands out in such a fun way that kind of harkens back to the original Turtles with, you know, the when they released the issues that had the splash of red on the mask, but black and white everything else.
I love that art style so much. Yeah, and they like, even the turtle designs are a little more grounded. I guess they're beaky. They look a little more turtly than our favorite kind of round nosed turtles. It makes me think of like the Michael Zulli run.
Have you seen the B cover though?
No, I have not.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to share this link with you so you can look at the same stuff that I'm looking at. Cause it is fantastic, dude. This one, all the characters are green. The background's black and there's these like white highlights and line work. And like there's Rocksteady shooting his gun and the muzzle flash is white from that, but all the characters are green. And like, look at the, like, Rocksteady and Bebop look badass. And I love the shape of the foot soldiers' head masks. They're like exaggerated, almost like ghostly, almost like the alien looking.
They look like Candlejack.
Yeah.
They look like Candlejack from Freakazoid. Fuck off. Oh yeah, this art is insane.
Like the turtles have a fun look to them, where their faces almost look like chunky. Mike's missing a tooth.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's unbridled chaos. I love all the like the bullet shells flying over the place.
Yeah,
the spikes and like rivets on their jackets, straight out of Hot Topic. I love it.
Oh my god, so cool. Then the anniversary cover is Pre-Mutation Splinter finding the baby turtles in the sewer
with the green hands. I like that.
And again, like just awesome art on this. As you see each great of the turtles variety. Looking up at him.
Yeah, really excellent variety of art in this. That's what I want to see more of.
You get, I guess it's called Cover R or Cover RI, but it looks like the 2003 series almost.
Yeah, kinda does. Yeah, I think this one is honestly at the top of my list as far as excitement goes because of that anthology aspect.
Yeah.
And just overall, just loving the presentation. And it harkens so much to like Tales of the TMNT, right?
Yeah.
Where they just decided like, we just want to make some one-offs and just tell a good self-contained story. Give me more of that.
And these anthology type books are a lot of fun too, because you do get these writers who they have an emotional connection to the characters. They have like a history with the franchise as like a fan, but it gives them the opportunity to come in and be like, hey, I'm not going to be a long-term writer on this series, but to be able to tell a couple-page story in my style, and it just gives you a lot of variety. It's a lot of fun.
Yep. So moving on, you'd started to set up Night Watcher. So Night Watcher is the next one on the list.
Yeah. So this ongoing series comes to us from writer Juni Ba and artist Pharaoh Pei. In Who is the Night Watcher, a new vigilante rises up to stand against violence and discrimination against mutants. A prelude story will appear in the TMNT Free Comic Book Day 2024 issue. And they go on to explain that in the 2007 animated TMNT movie, this was the vigilante identity that Raphael used. and fans quickly fell in love with it. But who is the Night Watcher in the IDW universe? That's the big question as this new vigilante steps into the scene.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me before reading that summary that this might not be Raph.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I just assumed that it was Raph.
I kind of hope that the entire book works that way. Like the audience gets kept in the dark. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be very fun. And it you could tell
that like Last Ronin hype all over again.
For sure. Yeah. And there is a bit of like, you know, there's red highlights on the character design on the cover, which you would leave like, oh, red. It's going to be Raphael. But I'd actually love it if it was like Jenica.
I think that. OK, so let's go ahead. I think it is Jenica.
It would make the most sense since from what's happening in the IDW universe where everyone's kind of going off and doing their own thing.
And let me just say this, it would add a really interesting dynamic back into the Casey Jenica relationship.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be cool.
I think that'd be really good. I think that would be a really great decision for them to go with, but I don't know if that's necessarily what it is. Either way, we know it's got to be a turtle in the suit because it's got the three fingers.
Yes. Yeah. The description that they had a quote from Junie Ba says, I find the world of TMNT extremely fun and fascinating, and I want to use the character of Night Watcher as an anchor to explore that world in an action-packed adventure format that I hope people will love. While it's a spinoff, I do want it to stand on its own as something you like for itself, and not just because it's tied to TMNT. Expect some heartfelt stories, Saturday morning action cartoon vibes, and cool vigilante badassery.
You know what this sounds like to me? Batman the Animated Series starring Turtles.
I mean, that'd be great. I actually misunderstood because I read that quote and thought like, I missed where they said that it's tied to the IDW universe. And I thought this was an offshoot of the Saturday Morning Adventures.
Oh, whoa, that would be weird.
Right? It felt like, I'm like, oh, tonally, that's kind of weird, but okay, cool. But it makes a lot more sense as being like a side story to the IDW.
Oh, I mean, that's something you could pluck out of that 2007 movie and it would seamlessly work in IDW.
Yeah. You should definitely check out this article from Nerdist, though, because they have some of the sketch work from Pharaoh Pei about like the early draft of the character, and it looks really cool in black and white.
We will include a link in the description, but also a quick trip over to Nerdist, and it's going to be right on the front.
Yeah.
Next up, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Usagi Yojimbo Saturday Morning Adventures.
Woo! It's a 40-page one-shot written by Eric Burnham and artist Jack Lawrence, bringing the Turtles together with one legendary badass rabbit. It hits comic shops in June, and you can check out all four covers in the Nerdist article.
Every time the Turtles cross over with Usagi, it's something special, and it's been done in almost every iteration, almost. All the way back in the 1987 TV series and the comics, you know, they made friends with Stan Sakai, and it's been a romance ever since. Usagi
always look forward to
it. What was that?
I always look forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, and they showed up in 2003, showed up in 2012, shown up in IDW. It's a great marriage of franchises, and it works so well together. The writing gets a little janky sometimes just because Stan Sakai does not write for teenagers, but it's still really fun to read, and the action is usually fun and interesting, and you actually might even learn a little bit of something about Japanese culture. And let's be honest here, that Saturday Morning Adventures ongoing series is chef's kiss. It's so good. I'm surprised at how much they've taken it and matured it, and I don't want that to sound like a deterrent. It's still goofy, fun, and jokes, but it's clearly written for us who grew up on the series. It's not written for the 8-year-olds who would be watching it right now. It's written for us because we grew up with it, and it speaks so loudly to our generation. And they're doing cool things, like interesting things, like having major crossover characters show up as they set up a major crossover event that has never been done with the 87 at this scale.
That was the thing that finally drew me into being like, oh man, I need to catch up on this, because I have missed this particular comic. I need to get into it. I don't know if there are like volumes of it or if I just have to buy all the back issues, but I'll have to head to the comic shop and figure it out.
Yeah, it's surprisingly relevant. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
All right. Next up in the presser is TMNT Mutant Nation, This ongoing series features fan favorite creatives Tom Waltz, Sophie Campbell, and more. Tom Waltz wrote 100 issues of the ongoing and co-wrote Last Ronin. Sophie Campbell wrote 50 issues of the ongoing series. The IDW TMNT universe is full of so many compelling and exciting characters, and this ongoing series will bring that array of mutants and other characters into the spotlight. Here's what Waltz had to say about this new addition to the TMNT universe. With TMNT Mutant Nation, we have the opportunity to further expand our long-running IDW TMNT universe alongside Jason Aaron's relaunch of the main ongoing TMNT series. We've built a massively diverse and exciting ensemble cast of characters and settings over the years, and I'm ecstatic to remain a part of its continued evolution alongside fellow creators, telling more TMNT stories that we all hope will continue to entertain our amazingly enthusiastic and loyal readership, both old and new. It goes on sale in September.
So this sounds more like what is going to be direct impact as, you know, fallout from the mutant town, from the Armageddon game. This is where a lot of that, but it's not going to necessarily be our four brothers and adoptive sister anymore. I think this is where we're going to see the side stories and more supporting characters, maybe another April run, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I love that idea. There have been these little bits of information that we have been seeing in the main run. And, you know, I know our listeners come here because we're talking about the original series. We don't really we don't tend to go into spoilers on the IDW run, but there are some interesting like comments and footnotes that happen in the run that reference people doing things elsewhere, not just like in New York City, but outside of the city and across the United States as a whole. So this title being Mutant Nation really, I think, drives home that possibility that like the world of Mutant Town is going to be expanding in the future.
I mean, we know that Raph is going to take off on a bit of a road trip. That's been set up in the main line. So, yeah, this has a lot of expansion possibility here.
Yeah, I mean, more than just Raph, like, and you could choose to cut this out if we want, but, like, Mikey's in California.
Right,
because he's been touring with the Triceraton's name.
Oh, Siri.
Yeah, he's been touring with Siri on her, like, diplomatic mission.
Right, which is another kind of nod back to what Mirage was doing in the fourth volume when Michelangelo essentially became an ambassador for Earth.
Yeah. And we know, for example, like, Jenica's band has been on tour.
Right. What was the name of... Did they ever name the band?
They must have. I'll try and Google it, but...
Because it's her and her girlfriend Sheena, right?
Yeah, and
and Bob, was Bob in the band? Bob the Baboon?
No, not Bob. Bob's been training with Leo.
That's right.
It was Coda?
Yeah.
Right, isn't that her name?
Oh god, now I gotta look it up again. I think this is the only downside, is like, now there's so much lore to keep up
with. There is a lot. what's the name of the Falcon mutant?
Oh, Koya. Yeah, they did get Koya to join the band. That was sick. I like that. I like that, like, old enemies have become allies in very interesting ways. And they handle the dynamic very well. It's not just like Magneto showed up at the X-Mansion. It's like, I'm in charge now. And everyone's like, okie doke.
Oh, my God. The name of their band is Created in Darkness.
Oh, that's kind of cringe.
Yeah, the members are Diamond, who is the Porcupine drummer, Jay, the Poison Dart Frog keyboardist, Jenica as the guitarist, Joe the Orca and other guitarist, Koya is the lead singer. God, we gotta get which birds do these metal singers sound like?
I'll put that link in the Discord too.
And Tusk is the mutant pig, who is another guitarist. So a lot of guitarists in this band.
It's a big punk band.
Yep.
And they got to be punk, because there's no way Koi is singing melodically.
Six members. The wiki calls them a metal band. So.
Oh, they are a metal band. All right. Still.
Get some nice hawk screams.
Yeah, that sounds pretty sick. I'd go to that show.
So, yeah, I mean, like, we have all these opportunities to see what these characters are doing all over the nation, all over the world. And so Mutant Nation does really feel like a good title for it. Although I am interested in the like barbed wire motif in the title.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of implies something like, you know, a concentration camp of sorts, which is something familiar to what they did with Mutant Town. So
yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, next up and last on this particular list, although we have a couple other things we want to talk about real quick, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Alpha Number 1, and it's a one-shot issue featuring a story by Tom Waltz and Gavin Smith and Jason Aaron and Chris Burnham. The issue marks Jason Aaron's debut as a TMNT writer. He'll also be writing the relaunch, which comes out in July. This story will set the tone for the comics to follow. As far as content goes, this issue will feature fan-favorite Fifth Turtle Jenica, and the story by Waltz and Smith will explore the aftermath of the epic and emotional TMNT number 150, which comes out on April 10th. Mark your calendars. Alpha number 1 will go on sale on June 5th. And even in this Nerdist article, they say even more Turtles titles are coming soon from IDW, with official announcements forthcoming. It's going to be a big year.
So I guess I misread. I thought Alpha was going to be essentially the replacement for the mainline Turtles, but it sounds like it's more of a like an encore.
I think this is just a one shot where it's going to take, like, it's going to bring Tom Waltz back for one story and introduce Jason Aaron writing and Chris Burnham drawing. So it's kind of like the passing of the torch.
It's the tastemaker.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if like Alpha will be the title of the series going forward, or if this is, they're going to drop Alpha for TMNT. It just be TMNT moving forward. It'll be TMNT number one, mm-hmm. But they do label Alpha number one as a one shot. So I guess we'll just have to see.
Gotcha. Gotcha. It's an exciting time. And yeah. We do have one more book that we did want to briefly touch on, and that is the one that we all known has been coming for a while, and that is The Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh man, what a big book.
And I mean, by the sounds of it, that's gonna be a limited run, right?
I'll have to look that up, because the other thing I had up was for the source book.
Oh, I forgot about the source book, yeah.
So Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution, it will ship on March 6th, so coming up real soon.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this is the like full spotlight on the new generation of Turtles in the Ronin canon.
Now, I was originally apprehensive to this because I thought that the Last Ronin was such a perfect bookend and such a beautiful dismount, but they created another whole friggin' world here that's even more interesting. And with these new Turtles, this new generation of Turtles, they're able to try some new things that I don't think that they could have, considering some of the more well-established archetypes that we know about the four brothers. So, you know, the inclusion of Uno, Yi, Odin, and Moha gives a lot of opportunity to see someone like April get expanded as a character, because her role has to change. And just, you know, being that it's in the future and the ongoing legacy of the Oroku clan and the Foot clan, I'm excited again. Like, I was apprehensive, but I'm warming up to it.
Here's the press release for it. This is TMNT, The Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution is written by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz, with art by Esau Escorza and Ben Bishop, colors by Edgar Delgado, and letters by Sean Lee. More than a decade after The Last Ronin defeated the Foot Clan, New York City finds itself in a state of steady decline. Now, the disparate gangs vie for economic and political control, and the chaos is taking its toll. It's clear to Casey Marie that if something isn't done soon, the city she knows and loves will be lost forever. So whether they're ready or not, she and her young peoples must raise a new coalition and lead the charge to keep the peace. Witness the rise of the next generation of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as they fight to restore peace to the streets they live below. Legendary TMNT co-creator Kevin Eastman proudly presents the next epic chapter of The Last Ronin, reassembling the acclaimed creative team from the original Monster bestseller for a second oversized prestige format miniseries event. And yeah, it was announced pretty recently that The Last Ronin was the best-selling graphic novel of 2023.
Isn't that insane that the Turtles spinoff was the highest-selling book last year?
It's pretty awesome.
Like, I had no idea how culturally impactful that Last Ronin was going to be. And I mean, it's a love letter to Dark Knight Returns, and that continues with this element of like building a new coalition, which is something that had been touched on by Frank Miller in a couple of different iterations.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is so wild. Like peak Turtle Mania, man.
I love it. I really do. And I love that, like, I love that The Last Ronin was so popular and so successful because it was this original story that Eastman and Laird did together. And to have something be brought back from, like, you know, they originally crafted it like in the late 80s, pretty soon after they had started this whole thing, for it to come back and to see the popularity that it has. It's like it feels really good to see something that Eastman and Laird did together get the success and the recognition and to be continued on this way with such a stellar team. Like, yes, give me more Tom Waltz, give me more Eastman, give me more of all of those artists. It just feels really good as a lifelong Turtles fan that, like, yeah, the new stuff is good, the old stuff is good, it's just all good.
As far as the Turtle future epilogues go, we've got a bunch of them. You know, we've seen everything from when 2003 went to the future, 2012 had the Mad Max alternate timeline thing going on there. Future Shark Cyber Samurai epilogue, all this stuff. I think for my money, like, Last Ronin, hands down, best one.
Yeah, I'm
it's hard.
I tend to agree with you. I just got the Lost Years, and so I think what I'm gonna do is go back and read all of Last Ronin to lead into Lost Years and then pick up two when it comes out.
Nice.
So I'm gonna make a whole run of it.
And while we're at it, I know that there's been a lot of gloom and doom surrounding it, considering the studio had to make some major layoffs, but the Last Ronin game, as far as we know, is still coming.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that, because that was one of the Embracer Group studios, right?
Right.
Which, I mean, that is just like, I mean, there's been so many layoffs in the video game world, it's hard to even really talk about. But I think it's one of the
media in general is hemorrhaging right now. But yeah,
for sure. I do think it's one of those things where the process is so early on. Like, Nickelodeon basically just said, like, we're developing this game. It might be early enough where, like, even if this studio unfortunately can't continue doing it, that they'll be able to find another studio to pick it up.
Yeah, I'm sure they like on the unfortunate side of that would likely be the case, because the brand is just too strong for them to let it sleep.
Oh my God. Like, yeah, I mean, with it being the, like, I don't want to put this like out of like, or blow this up too big, but like by literally having the most purchased graphic novel, like the highest selling graphic novel in a given year, like the word of mouth and the excitement on that brand on Last Ronin is huge. And it would be in Nickelodeon's best interest, Viacom, Paramount, however you want to call them. It would be in their best interest economically to really ride that wave as much as they can. And if we're not going to get something like a movie out of it, doing a video game would be a really good venue, just so that you can kind of live and breathe in that world the same way that you can with the graphic novel.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they'd be absolute fools to sleep on it.
But it is hard to make games, you know, like even if they, you know, having announced it recently, even if everything went perfect with the original, with the studio who's developing it, it would still be like 6-7 years at least until we see it.
Oh, absolutely. So let's not hold our breath, but let's also not gloom and doom either.
Yeah.
So we got to bring this to a close. We want to talk about Sourcebook real quick, and just the sheer fact that they're setting up basically Turtles Forever too.
Yeah. So the Sourcebook is at the, I think those might be two different things, at least based on what I've seen, but the Sourcebook is everything from the IDW series so far, like as an encyclopedic type thing. It's not a collection of every single issue, but it is a guide to those issues and everything that's happened, all the characters who've been introduced between issues 1 and 150. The description here from Penguin Random House, the publisher, says, spanning over 14 years and 250 issues, from the ongoing series to multiple miniseries, IDW's TMNT universe makes up a world full of unforgettable characters, storylines, and locations. This source book aims to help guide readers through it all with information about characters' histories and important story points, plus the significance of multiple locations and dimensions, all accompanied by beautiful illustrations from the myriad of talented artists that have worked on the series over the years. So it's kind of like a companion piece that if you want to, if you've read every single IDW issue and you want to be reminded of what's of what you read, or if you're starting with the new relaunch and you want further context on everything that's come before, because trying to pick up 250 issues on a new number one is a really daunting task, well, the source book is a great way for you to get caught up on everything happening in this world.
This is the Silmarillion for turtles.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It's the Tolkien appendices for those of us who don't remember what the difference between Dimension X and Dimension Y is. And yes, there is a difference.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And they did say that, like, the purpose of this book was not to be like the Marvel Encyclopedia. There have been a couple different versions of that over the years. The purpose of this was to be a companion piece to what's been to what's coming in the future. So it is kind of like that Silmarillion example where, like, it's a almost like appendices and addendums on everything that's happening so that you could follow the context of the history of this world.
And we got to go back centuries too, mind you.
Yeah, for sure. What were you talking about with, like, Turtles Forever 2, though?
All right, so the thing that they've been setting up in IDW and the Saturday Morning Adventures is that Renette has finally cut loose, and she is now crossing over, and we are seeing the giant multiversal, as we all collectively kind of roll our eyes and get, you know, Marvel fatigue, and the Turtles are like, nah, fuck it, double down. So we're getting the giant multiversal crossover that we've been all wishing for, and they're expanding beyond even what we've seen so far. So we've had Turtles Forever, we've had the two crossovers in the 2012 with the 87 line, both of which kind of winked at the Mirage. But no one has ever gone as far as including all of the animated franchises. So we're going to have 2012 CGI Mikey, 2017 Rise Raph, 2003 Donatello, the 87 Turtles, a Mirage Turtle, and then Jenica from the IDW all meeting together in some cockamamie adventure.
Yeah, the art that I've seen thus far by Sarah Meyer has everyone who you've just explained and the I believe it is the person who kind of brings them all together. And then there's a little cutout of 87 Raph just looking like, what the now?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Mr. Mizya Spitlick kind of situation, fifth dimension kind of dude. So he's just wreaking havoc just to have the excuse to have everybody on the screen together. And I just like, this is cool. I know, you know, Rise has a really rabid, intense, loyal fan base. That is not us, but that is okay. But it is cool to see these kind of included again at the broader scope, because it's always been like the 2003 plus the OGs, or the 2012 plus the OGs. Now everybody's in the park ready to play, and it just makes you wonder, like, how much further can we take this? You know, are we going to see that crossover with the 90s Jim Henson rubber suit turtle movie turtles show up? Are we going to see, like, digitized sprites from the Game Boy games show up? Are we going to see the alternate style, like Dreamwave, which was loosely based on the 2003 but completely different art style and writing style? There's so many different versions. Do we see the Michael Zulli, like, monster turtles that can't fucking speak? Let's do it. Let's fucking go.
Give me a sneak peek at the Turtles 4 original movie Next Mutation stuff, but not the TV Next Mutation, but, like, the original concept they had for the fourth live action movie.
Give me the Kevin Eastman napkin special with the original turtle just drawn with duct tape nunchucks on his forearm.
Yes, yes, yes. I am personally very excited that Rise Raph has been included in this, since I got to voice the character for a fan comic fairly recently.
Plug it.
Gotta plug it. Go check it out on Twitter and YouTube. You can check my Twitter out, VoxBidalary, to get the links to that. It's fun stuff.
It's really good.
But yeah, man, that the cover looks great. You've got a issue 13, Turtles versus More Turtles, with a quote at the bottom that says, "You're one pizza eating second away from the sewer shaking battle you thought could totally sort of happen."
All our dreams come true. And that's really kind of the apex that we're coming to. This is going to be that big crossover event, and then 150 happens, and then boom, it's a whole new era.
And just to, not to spend too much more time on this, but to wrap everything up, like, oh my God, there's been so much turtle stuff. It's been amazing. Like, I did the Kickstarter for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and other Strangeness tabletop role-playing game re-releases from Palladium Books. I actually did, Brian, I grinded through all of the Fortnite Battle Pass so that I could get the Ninja Turtle stuff.
Wait, you had to grind? I thought you just bought them.
So I bought the Turtles. That was just like you go to the store and you buy them. Same thing for Splinter and April. But they did an event the last like 2 weeks that you would unlock Shredder, Super Shredder, a whole bunch of gear from like his gauntlets and cape and some other things. And at the end, if you did enough of like the 6 week quests, or really the 6 stage quests, you unlocked a backpack that's Krang holding a vial of ooze that he like blinks and opens his mouth and stuff while you're running around.
Oh, neat. I saw the van power up. That was pretty sick.
It's yeah. A little go-kart. Love it.
I've never been a big Fortnite guy, but this has gotten me as close as I'm ever probably going to get. Maybe we should do like a Let's Play or something like that. I don't want to like film it or anything, but maybe we'll throw it in Discord if we're planning something and anybody around can join us.
I'll show off the all the skins and stuff that I got during the event. It was a lot of fun. They had
the character models look good.
They do. And so here's a little fun tidbit. There was quests that you had to do in order to unlock the stuff, right? Like you did these quests, you got ooze. The more ooze you got, the more you unlocked from this secondary battle pass that they had for the event. But each of the missions were themed around a certain character. So like Leo would ask you to go do this stuff and Donnie would ask you to go do this stuff and blah, 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 blah. And so it was little things like Donnie would ask you to like, oh, find this kind of gadget and use that gadget, like things that thematically make sense with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that stood out to me the most was Mikey, because most of Mikey's are, oh, find find a skateboard. What are they called in the 87 series? The
Cheapskate.
The Cheapskate. So they have a version of the Cheapskate, like a hoverboard from the video game. I guess it's closer to the hoverboard.
Sweet.
But like, go find a hoverboard and do tricks on it, and go find pizza and have a pizza party with your friends. Like those kind of things. They're like, oh yeah, party dude stuff makes sense. But then in one of the last quests, there's one Mikey quest where you have to be the last person on your team and get a certain amount of kills.
Oops.
Like what a cool reference to put in there to see like. It showed you that like, oh, hey, the people behind this event are really paying attention to the whole like franchise and not just like one version of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Last Man Standing is not a new game mode, but for them to assign it to Michelangelo, that was intentional. That's sweet. Yeah, we should we should set up like a play date and just see if anybody wants to join us.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So that's a whole news dump. And we'll be coming back soon. We've been working on our very special episode where we have a very important guest join us on the show. It's a longer episode. It's taken a little bit more to edit, but it's coming soon. So hopefully this will hold you off for the time being. Did we forget anything? Oh, I did. I forgot one. Turtles Alpha. Did you see the cameo on the cover for that?
I will look it up again.
Sorry, I forgot something. I looked down and I was like, oh shit, I forgot something.
Oh no, you know why? Because the Nerdist article didn't have the cover.
Man, now I can't find the art, but it was totally out there somewhere. And if I can find it, I will send it to you. We can cut this entire section out because it isn't that important. But the villain on the cover of the Alpha one shot is Antrax. Oh, I found it. And I was just like, that is one of the Playmates villains that I thought we'd never see again.
Oh, sweet.
And let's be honest, old Hob looked pretty badass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love these characters. Oh, my God. That's such a cool cover.
Right? Now, I keep dropping this, but that really looks like a Tales from the TMNT cover.
Yeah, I could see it. Oh, my God. That is so cool. And the cutout of Donnie there, too.
Antrax, the dumbest pun in all of the turtle villains, and they're bringing it back.
Well, I mean, look at what IDW's done over its history. I mean, we've talked a lot privately about Armagon and the change in that character. Like, oh my goodness,
fucking yikes! But I mean, at least that had a little bit more. Antrax was such a dumb villain, and they're gonna make it awesome because that's what they just keep doing. Like, they keep finding ways to make these characters work better in this recipe.
Yep.
I swear, if they come back and they make Pizza Face work, I'm gonna drop all my fucking yeah.
I just really love the combination of this version of Antrax with Old Hob, because Old Hob is an IDW character. And so it's that perfect example of what the IDW series has been from the beginning, of this like combination of new and old.
Yep. Yep. And they just keep knocking it out of the park. I really don't have any major complaints. So buckle up, everybody. 2024 is going to be a big year for Turtles. We will see you next time with our very extra special episode covering Cowabunga Shredhead, one of our all-time favorites. And Dan, you got anything else?
Cowabunga.
Cowabunga. Later, everybody.
That's actually Hatebeak, and their singer is a stupid parrot.